The Hobbit, Part 2, by J.R.R. Tolkien.
When Bilbo opened his eyes, he wondered if he had, for it was just as dark as with them shut. He could hear nothing, see nothing, and he could feel nothing except the stone of the floor. Very slowly he got up and groped about on all fours till he touched the wall of the tunnel. But neither up nor down it could he find anything, nothing at all. No sign of goblins, no sign of dwarves. He crawled along for a good way till suddenly his hand met what felt like a tiny ring of cold metal lying on the floor of the tunnel. It was a turning point in his career, but he did not know it.
It feels like a ring. Well, I'll just put it in my pocket. It certainly doesn't seem of any particular use at the moment. Oh, I wish I was home in my own kitchen frying bacon and eggs. Ah, well, at least I've still got my pipe. It's not broken. And here's my tobacco pouch. Oh, I haven't got any matches. It's just as well. Goodness knows what the striking of matches and the smell of tobacco would bring on me out of the dark holes in this horrible place. Well, here's my little sword. It shines pale and dim like Thorin's and Gandalf's swords, so it's an elvish blade, too, and goblins are not very near, or it would shine brighter. Now, what should I do? Go back? No good at all. Go forward? Only thing to do. On we go.
On and on he went, and down, hating to go on, not daring to stop. And suddenly, without any warning, he trotted splash into water.
Oh, it's icy cold. Oh, it's an underground pool or lake. Well, I can't go on, that's certain. There are strange things living in the pools and lakes in the hearts of mountains. Nasty, slimy things with big, bulging, blind eyes wriggling in the water. Now what'll I do?
As Bilbo sat on the brink of the underground lake, altogether flummoxed and at the end of his way and his wits, a slimy creature called Gollum watched him from a tiny rock island in the middle of the lake. Gollum, as dark as darkness, except for two big, round, pale eyes in his thin face. He had a little boat, and he rowed about quietly on the lake with large feet dangling over the side, looking out of his pale, lamp-like eyes for blind fish, which he grabbed with his long fingers as quick as thinking. He liked meat, too. Goblin, he thought, good when he could get it. But he took care they never found him out. He just throttled them from behind if they ever came down alone anywhere near the edge of the water while he was prowling about. Gollum got into his boat and shot off from the island and silently came to where Bilbo sat.
Bless us and splash us, my precious. I guess it's a choice feast. At least a tasty morsel it'd make us.
Who are you?
What is he, my precious?
I'm Mr. Bilbo Baggins. I've lost the dwarves, and I've lost the wizard, and I don't know where I am, and I don't want to know, if only I can get away.
What's he got in his hands?
A sword. A blade which came out of Gondolin.
Perhaps he sits here and chats with it a bit, see, my precious. It likes riddles. Perhaps it does. Does it? Gollum.
When he said Gollum, he made a horrible swallowing noise in his throat. That's how he got his name, though he always called himself My Precious.
Does Baggins like riddles, does it?
Very well, but you ask the first riddle.
What has roots as nobody sees? Is taller than trees, up it goes, and yet never grows.
Easy. Mountain, I suppose.
Does it guess easy? It must have a competition with us, my precious. If Precious asks, and Baggins doesn't answer, we eat it, my precious. If Baggins asks us, and we doesn't answer, then we does what it wants. We show Baggins the way out. Yes.
All right. Here's a riddle. 30 white horses on a red hill. First they champ, then they stamp, then they stand still.
30. Teeth, my precious, but we has only 6. Here's another riddle for Bagginses. Voiceless it cries, wingless flutters, toothless bites. Mouthless mutters.
Half a moment. Wind. Wind, of course. This'll puzzle the nasty little underground creature. Listen to this riddle. An eye in a blue face saw an eye in a green face. That eye is like to this eye, said the first eye, but in low place, not in high place.
My precious columns. Sun on the daisies, it means it does.
All right, it's your turn.
It cannot be seen, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt. It lies behind stars and under hills, and empty halls it fills. It comes first and follows after, ends life, kills laughter.
Ah, Doc, that's it, Doc. Here's one for you. A box without hinges, key, or lid, yet golden treasure inside is hid. Well, what is it? The answer's not a kettle boiling over, as you seem to think from the noise you're making.
Give us a chance. Let it give us a chance, my precious.
Well, what about your guess?
Eggs, it is. Now, Oh, here's a riddle for Baggins. Alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, ever drinking, all in mail, never clinking. Is it nice, my precious? Is it juicy? Is it scrumptiously crunchable, Column?
Half a moment. I gave you a good long chance just now.
It must make haste. Haste.
What's that? Oh, it's a fish. That's it. Fish. Fish. It's a fish. That's the answer to your riddle.
Now it's got to ask us a question, my precious. Ask us. Ask us.
What have I got in my pocket?
Not fair. Not fair. It isn't fair, my precious, to ask us what it's got in its nasty little pocket, says.
What have I got in my pocket?
It must give us three guesses, my precious. Three guesses.
Very well. Guess away.
Hands.
Wrong. Guess again.
Knife.
Wrong. Last guess. Come on, I'm waiting. Time's up.
String or nothing.
Both wrong. Well, what about your promise? I want to go. You must show me the way.
Did we say so, precious? Show the nasty little Baggins the way out. Yes. Yes. But what has it got in its pocket, says Clopton?
Never you mind. A promise is a promise.
We can't go up tunnels so hasty. We must go and get some things first. Yes, things to help us.
Well, hurry up.
My birthday present. That's what we want now. Yes, we want it. And the nasty little Baggins can't see us. And its nasty little sword will be useless.
Tell us that! answers were to be guessed, not given.
And it wasn't a fair question, not a riddle. What has it got in its pocket, sir?
I asked you a question first. What have you lost? Tell me that.
Now the light in Gollum's eyes had become a green fire, and it was coming swiftly nearer. Gollum was in his boat again, paddling wildly back to the dark shore. Such a rage of loss and suspicion was in his heart that no sword had any more terror for him. Bilbo could not guess what had maddened the wretched creature, but he saw that Gollum meant to murder him. He turned and ran blindly back up the dark passage down which he had come, wondering what it was that he had in his pocket. The ring felt very cold as it quietly slipped onto his groping forefinger.
What has it got in its pocket, sir?
The hiss was close behind him. He turned now and saw Gollum's eyes like small green lamps coming up the slope. Terrified, he tried to run faster, but suddenly he struck his toes on a snag in the floor and fell flat with his little sword under him. In a moment, Gollum was on him. But before Bilbo could do anything, Gollum passed by, taking no notice of him, cursing and whispering as he ran.
Curse the bands. What has it got in its pockets? Oh, we guess. We guess, my precious gun. My birthday present. We guess as precious. Only guesses. We can't know till we find the nasty creature and squeeze it yet.
Bilbo pricked up his ears. What could it mean? Gollum could see in the dark, yet he passed by as if he did not see the hobbit. Bilbo was at last beginning to guess himself. He hurried a little, keeping close to the creature, who was still going quickly, not looking back, but turning his head from side to side, looking for Bilbo.
It doesn't know what the present can do, does it? It'll just keep it in its pockets. It doesn't know, and it can't go far. Phew! The goblins will catch it. Goblins has come. If the nasty Baggins has got the present, our precious present, then goblins will get it. Shan't ever be safe again. Never come. One of the goblinses will put on the ring, and then no one will see him. He'll be there but not seen. He'll come creepsy and tricksy and catch us. Come, come. The nasty Baggins knows a way in. It must know a way out, yes. It's off to the back door. To the back door, that's it.
With a spring, Gollum got up and started shambling off at a great pace. Bilbo hurried after him, still cautiously. His head was in a whirl of hope and wonder. It seemed that the ring he had was a magic ring. It made you invisible. He had heard of such things, of course, in old, old tales. But it was hard to believe that he had really found one by accident. Still, there it was. Gollum, with his bright eyes, had passed him by only a yard to one side. On they went, Gollum flip-flapping ahead, hissing and cursing, Bilbo behind, going as softly as a hobbit can. Soon they came to places where, as Bilbo had noticed on the way down, side passages opened this way and that. Gollum began at once to count them.
One left, yes. One right. Two right, yes, yes. Two left. Three right. Four right. Yes, this is the way. Seven right, yes. Six left, yes. This is it. This is the way to the back door. Here's the passage. But we dursn't go in, precious. No, we dursn't. Goblins is down there. Lots of goblins. We smells them.
Bilbo crept forward silently and saw Gollum sitting humped up right in the opening. His eyes gleamed cold in his head as he swayed it from side to side between his knees. As Bilbo crept nearer, Gollum stiffened at once and sniffed, and his eyes went green. He hissed softly but menacingly. He could not see the hobbit, but now he was on the alert, and he had other senses that the darkness had sharpened, hearing and smell. Bilbo almost stopped breathing and went stiff himself. He was desperate. He must get away out of this horrible darkness while he had any strength left. He trembled. And then, quite suddenly, in a flash, as if lifted by a new strength and resolve, he leaped straight over Gollum's head. Gollum threw himself backwards and grabbed as the hobbit flew over him, but too late. His hands snapped on thin air, and Bilbo, falling fair on his sturdy feet, sped off down the tunnel.
Goblins are so near that he's smelt them. Then they'll have heard his shrieking and cursing. Be careful now, or this way will lead you to worse things. What's that? A light ahead. Not red light from a fire or a lantern, but a pale out-of-doors sort of light. It's sunshine.
Scuttling as fast as his legs would carry him, he came to a large open space where a leak of sunshine came through a doorway, where a great door, a stone door, was left standing partly open. Bilbo blinked, and then suddenly he saw the goblins. Goblins in full armor with drawn swords sitting just inside the door. They saw him sooner than he saw them. The ring was not on his finger. With yells of delight, the goblins rushed upon him. He stuck his hands into his pockets, and there was the ring, still in his left pocket. It slipped on his finger, and the goblins stopped short.
Where is it?
Go back up the passage.
This way.
Look out for the door.
I must get to the door. I must get to the door.
Then it was like a horrible game of blind man's buff. The place was full of goblins running about, and the poor little hobbit dodged this way and that, was knocked over by a goblin, slipped between the legs of the captain, got up and ran for the door. He tried to squeeze through the crack. He squeezed, and he stuck. He could see outside into the open air, but he couldn't get through.
Something's outside.
Bilbo's heart jumped into his mouth. He gave a terrific squirm. Buttons burst off in all directions. He was through. Bilbo had escaped. Bilbo had escaped the goblins, but he did not know where he was. He had lost hood, cloak, food, pony, his buttons, and his friends. He wandered on and on till the sun began to sink westwards behind the mountain.
Good heavens! I seem to have got right to the other side of the Misty Mountains, right to the edge of the land beyond.
Where can Gandalf and the dwarves have got to? I only hope they're not still back there in the power of the goblins. I wonder if I should go back to look for them. I've got the ring, but those horrible, horrible tunnels. But it's my duty. I must turn back. What's that? Doesn't sound like goblins. Over in that dell, under the bushes, people are talking. Ah, there's a red hood. It's Balin doing lookout. I'll give them all a surprise. I've still got the ring on.
Go on without Mr. Baggins. We can't just leave him in the hands of the goblins.
He's been more trouble than you so far.
We might have chosen someone with more sense.
No, he's not a bad little chap. I wish to goodness you hadn't lost him.
If we have to go back now into those abominable tunnels to look for him, then drat him, I say.
I brought him, and I don't bring things that are of no use. Whatever did you want to go and drop him for, Dory?
You would have dropped him if a goblin had suddenly grabbed your leg from behind in the dark, tripped up your feet, and kicked you in the back.
Then why didn't you pick him up again?
Good heavens! Goblins fighting and biting in the dark, everybody falling over bodies and hitting one another. You nearly chopped off my head with Glamdring, and Thorin was stabbing here and there and everywhere with Orcrist. All of a sudden you gave one of your blinding flashes, and we saw the goblins running back yelping. You shouted, "Follow me, everybody!" And everybody ought to have followed. There was no time to count, as you know quite well, till we dashed through the gate guards and out the lower door. And here we are without the burglar, confusticating.
And here's the burglar.
Mr. Baggins! Balin, come here and tell me what kind of a lookout man lets people walk right in without a warning.
Well, it appears Mr. Baggins is a first-class burglar after all, huh, Balin?
I can't believe it. Baggins, how did you do it?
Oh, just crept along, you know, very carefully and quietly.
Well, it's the first time that even a mouse has crept along carefully and quietly under my very nose and not been spotted. I take off my hood to you. Balin, at your service.
Your servant, Mr. Baggins.
What did I tell you? Mr. Baggins has more about him than you guess.
After Bilbo had explained his adventures in the tunnels of the goblins and his encounter with Gollum, though he didn't tell them about the ring just yet, Gandalf told how he had worked his magic and allowed everyone to escape during the fireworks. Then he called everyone to the task at hand.
We must be getting on at once. Now we're a little rested. They'll be out after us in hundreds when night comes on. Already the shadows are lengthening. They can smell our footsteps for hours and hours after we've passed. We must be miles away before dark.
I'm dreadfully hungry.
I can't help it, unless you like to go back and ask the goblins nicely to let you have your pony back and your luggage.
No, thank you.
Very well, then. We must just tighten our belts and trudge on, or we shall be made into supper. And that'll be much worse than having none ourselves.
Must we go any further? My toes are all bruised and bent. My legs ache and my stomach is wagging like an empty sack. I can't see a thing.
A bit further.
Wolves!
What'll we do? Escaping goblins to be caught by wolves?
Up the trees, quick! Over there!
You've left the burglar behind again, Dory!
Oh, I can't
had me always carrying burglars on my back down tunnels and up trees. What do you think I am, a porter?
He'll be eaten if we don't do something. Be quick, Dory, and give Mr. Baggins a hand up.
Dory was really a decent fellow in spite of his grumbling. He actually climbed out of the tree and let Bilbo scramble up and stand on his back and climb into the tree. Just as the wolves trotted into the clearing, Dory jumped for the branches himself, only just in time.
These wolves are called wargs in the wild, and they often join in wicked deeds with the goblins.
At least they can't climb trees.
And they're afraid of fire, so let's see how they like a burning pine cone. Here's another with bright blue fire. And red. Now green. Take that.
Look! Through the trees! The glint of the moon on the goblin spears and helmets!
How could they have followed us already?
No doubt they had already planned for a raid tonight, and we just happened to be at their meeting place.
The wargs have caught some birds. Fly away, little birds.
Fly away if you can.
Why don't we roast these birds in their nests?
Yeah.
Good idea.
Roast.
Go away, little boys. Naughty little boys that play with fire get punished.
Stack the fern and brushwood round the tree trunk.
Sing, little birds. Why don't you sing?
That's it. Put the leaves and dead branches on the fire.
The flames were leaping up into the trees. The bark caught on fire, and the lower branches cracked. Gandalf and the others climbed to the tops of the trees. A sudden splendor flashed from Gandalf's wand like lightning as he got ready to spring down among the dancing goblins. But he never leaped. Just at that moment, a gigantic shadow swept down from above, and the Lord of the Eagles seized Gandalf in his talons and was gone. The great birds that were with him came like huge black shadows. Their beating wings smote the goblins to the ground or drove them far away. Their talons tore at goblin faces. Other birds flew to the treetops and seized the dwarves who were scrambling up as far as they dared to go. Poor Bilbo was nearly left behind again. He just managed to catch hold of Dory's legs as Dory was borne off last of all. They were all carried to a wide shelf of rock on the mountainside. The Lord of the Eagles was there speaking to Gandalf. He had heard the commotion in the forest below and had gone to see what mischief the goblins were doing. Gandalf, as it turned out, at once rendered a service to the eagles and healed their lord from an arrow wound. Saving Gandalf and the others had been one good turn for another. Food was then brought, which the dwarves prepared, and soon Bilbo's stomach was feeling full and comfortable again. So ended the adventures of the Misty Mountains. That night, Bilbo slept curled up on the hard rock more soundly than ever he had done on his feather bed in his own little hole at home. But all night he dreamed of his own house and wandered in his sleep into all his different rooms, looking for something that he could not find nor remember what it looked like.
Thank you.
The next morning, Bilbo woke up with the early sun in his eyes. He jumped up to look at the time and to go and put his kettle on, and found he was not home at all. He was still on the wide shelf of rock high in the mountains. After a breakfast of cold mutton and rabbit, Bilbo and the others made ready for a fresh start. With the sun still close to the eastern edge of things, 15 great birds rose from the mountainside and carried them to a great rock jutting out from a distant valley below. Quickly now, to the top of this rock, the eagles swooped one by one and set down their passengers. Then away they flew. There was a flat space on the top of the hill of stone and a well-worn path with many steps leading down it to the river, across which a ford of huge flat stones led to the grassland beyond the stream.
Well, I always meant to see you all safe, if possible, over the mountains, and now by good management and good luck, I've done it. Right. Indeed, we're now a good deal further east than I ever meant to come with you. For after all, this is not my adventure. No, I may look in on it again before it's all over, but in the meantime, I have some other pressing business to attend to. No, I'm not going to disappear this very instant. I can give you a day or two more. We have no food and no baggage and no ponies to ride, and you don't know where you are.
That's true.
Yes, I can tell you that. Very few people live in these parts, but there is somebody that I know of who lives not far away. That somebody made the steps on the great rock there. You see, the Carrack, I believe he calls it.
Who calls it?
The somebody I spoke of. A very great person. I'll introduce you slowly, two by two. And you must be careful not to annoy him. He could be appalling when he's angry.
Couldn't you find someone more easy-tempered?
Couldn't you make it a bit clearer?
Yes. Who is this somebody?
If you must know more, his name is Bjorn. He's very strong, and he's a skin changer.
Huh? Skin changer?
Yes, he's a skin changer. He changes his skin. Sometimes he's a huge black bear. Sometimes he's a great, strong, black-haired man with huge arms and a great beard. Oh. I can't tell you much more. As a bear, he ranges far and wide. I once saw him sitting all alone on the top of the Carrack at night, watching the moon sinking towards the misty mountains, and I heard him growl in the tongue of the bears. Well, we'd better be moving. We've a long walk before us.
I'm not thirsty. I'm not a boy.
I don't know when I've been so hot and hungry.
With all those clover fields and bees, there must be a lot of honey nearby.
Yes, Bjorn keeps hives and hives of great, fierce bees.
If one was to sting me, I'd swell up as big again as I am. I've never seen such bees.
We're on the edge of his bee pastures. See that thorn hedge? His place is just beyond. There's a gate over there. Now, you dwarves had better wait here. When I call or whistle, begin to come after me, but only in pairs, mind, about 5 minutes between each pair of you. Bomber is fattest and will do for two. He better come alone and last. Come on, Mr. Baggins!
The wizard and the hobbit went off along the hedge until they came to a wooden gate, high and broad, beyond which they could see gardens and a cluster of low wooden buildings, some thatched and made of unshaped logs. There were barns, stables, sheds, and a long, low wooden house. On the southward side of the great hedge were rows and rows of hives with bell-shaped tops made of straw. They pushed open the heavy, creaking gate and went down a wide track towards the house. Some horses, very sleek and well-groomed, trotted up across the grass and looked at them intently with very intelligent faces. Then off they galloped to the building.
They've gone to tell Bjorn of the arrival of strangers.
Soon they reached a courtyard. In the middle, there was lying a great oak trunk with many lopped branches beside it. Standing near was a huge man with thick black beard and hair and great bare arms and legs with knotted muscles. The horses were standing by him with their noses at his shoulder.
Here they are. They don't look dangerous. You can be off. Who are you? And what do you want?
I am Gandalf.
Never heard of him.
No.
And what's this little fellow?
That's Mr. Baggins, a hobbit of good family and unimpeachable reputation. I am a wizard. I have heard of you, if you haven't heard of me. Perhaps you've heard of my good cousin Radagast, who lives near the southern borders of Mirkwood.
Yes, not a bad fellow, as wizards go, I believe.
Ah.
Well, now I know who you are, or who you say you are. What do you want?
Well, to tell you the truth, we've lost our luggage and nearly lost our way, and are rather in need of help, or at least advice. I may say we've had rather a bad time with goblins in the mountains.
Goblins?
Yes.
Oh, so you've been having trouble with them, have you? What did you go near them for?
Oh, we didn't mean to. They surprised us at night in a pass which we had to cross. We were coming out of the lands over west into these countries. It's a long tale.
Well, then you'd better sit down and tell me some of it, if it won't take all day.
Certainly. Well, I was coming over the mountains with a friend or two.
Or two? I can only see one, and a little one at that.
Oh, well, to tell you the truth, I didn't like to bother you with a lot of us until I found out if you were busy. I'll give a call, if I may.
Go on, call away.
As I was saying, I was coming over the mountains with a friend or two.
Or three, you mean. But these two coming aren't hobbits. They're dwarves.
Thorin Oakenshield, at your service.
Dory, at your service.
I don't need your service, thank you, but I expect you need mine. I'm not over fond of dwarves, but if it's true you're Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, I believe, and that you're enemies of goblins, and are not up to any mischief in my lands... What are you up to, by the way?
Oh, they're on their way to visit the land of their fathers, away east beyond Mirkwood, and it's entirely an accident that we're in your lands at all. We were crossing by the high pass when we were attacked by the evil goblins, as I was about to tell you.
Go on telling them.
But then there was a terrible storm. The stone giants were out hurling rocks, and at the head of the pass, we took refuge in a cave, the hobbit and I, and oh, several of our companions.
Do you call two several?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, there were more than two.
Well, where are they? Killed? Eaten? Gone home?
Well, no. They don't seem all to have come when I whistled. Shy, I expect.
Go on, whistle again. I'm in for a party, it seems, and one or two more won't make any difference. They came pretty quick. Where were you hiding? Come on, my jack-in-the-boxes.
Nori at your service.
Oriat.
Thank you. When I want your help, I'll ask for it. Sit down, and let's get on with this tale, or it'll be supper time before it's ended.
Oh, well, as soon as we were asleep, a crack at the back of the cave opened. Goblins came out and grabbed the hobbit and the dwarves and our troop of ponies.
Troop of ponies? What were you, a circus? Or were you carrying lots of goods? Or do you always call six a troop?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, there were more than six ponies, for there were more than six of us. And here are two more.
Troop was right. A fine comic one. Come in, my merry men. And what are your names? I don't want your service just now. Only your names.
Balin.
Dwalin.
Now, go on with your story, wizard.
Where was I? Yes, I was not grabbed. I killed a goblin or two with a flash.
Good. It's some good being a wizard, then.
And slipped inside the crack before it closed. I followed down the main hall, which was crowded with goblins. The great goblin was there with 30 or 40 armed guards. I thought to myself,
What can a dozen do against so many?
A dozen? That's the first time I've heard eight called a dozen. Or have you still got some more jacks that haven't yet come out of their boxes?
Well, yes, there seem to be a couple more here now. Ophelia and Keeley, I believe.
That's enough bowing and smiling. Sit down and be quiet. Now, go on, Gandalf.
Well, I performed a bit of wizardry and caused the fire to fly up to the ceiling and then fall upon the goblins, allowing us to escape. After a lot of running, we counted ourselves and found that there was no hobbit. There were only 14 of us left.
14? That's the first time I've heard 1 from 10 leave 14.
Oh.
You mean 9, or else you haven't told me yet all the names of your party.
Well, of course, you haven't seen Owen and Glowin yet. And bless me, here they are. I hope you'll forgive them for bothering you.
Oh, let them come. Let them all come. Hurry up. Come along, you two, and sit down. But look here, Gandalf. Even now, we've only got yourself and 10 dwarves and the hobbit that was lost. That only makes 11, plus one mislaid, and not 14, unless wizards count differently to other people. But please, get on with the tale.
Well, we finally all escaped and made our way to the woods far from the goblins. But then a pack of wargs forced us to climb some trees. I tried to drive them off with some fireworks.
Well, I wish I'd been there. I'd have given them more than fireworks.
Well, I did the best I could. There we were, with the wolves going mad underneath us and the forest beginning to blaze in places, when goblins came down from the hills and discovered us. They yelled with delight and made fun of us. 15 birds in 5 fir trees, they shouted.
Good heavens!
Yes.
Don't pretend that goblins can't count. They can.
What?
12 isn't 15, and they know it.
And so do I. There were Biffa and Bofur as well. I haven't ventured to introduce them before, but here they are now.
Oh, and here's Bomber, too.
Well, now there are 15 of you.
Yeah.
And since goblins can count, I suppose that's all there were up in the trees. Now, perhaps we can finish this story without any more interruptions.
Bilbo saw how clever Gandalf had been. The interruptions had really made Bjorn more interested in the story, and the story had kept him from sending the dwarves off at once like suspicious beggars. Bjorn never invited people to his house, but now he'd got 15 strangers sitting on his porch. When Gandalf finished his tale, Bjorn was pleased and invited them all to supper. After a splendid meal, they all went to bed on mattresses of straw laid at the side of Bjorn's great hall. Once in the night, when Bilbo awoke, he heard a growling sound outside, a noise as of some great animal scuffling at the door. The next morning, both Bjorn and Gandalf were gone. The wizard came back late that night, but still they saw nothing of their host. But the following morning they were awakened by Bjorn himself.
So here you are still, not eaten up by wargs or goblins or wicked bears yet, Mr. Baggins. Little Bunny is getting nice and fat again on bread and honey, eh? Well, come and have some more. You probably wonder where I've been. I've been over the river and right back up into the mountains. It was a good story you told, Gandalf, but I like it still better now I'm sure it's true.
Ah.
I'll give you ponies to take you to the edge of Mirkwood. They're already packed with food to last for several weeks. Nuts, flour, sealed jars of dried fruits, and red earthenware pots of honey. And there are skins for water.
Water?
The way through Mirkwood is dark, dangerous, and difficult. Water's not easy to find there.
Ah.
There's one stream there, I know, black and strong, which crosses the path. That you should neither drink of nor bathe in, for it carries enchantment of great drowsiness and forgetfulness.
Is there any other advice you can give us?
Yes. Whatever you do, Do not stray from the path. Now, I wish you all speed, and my house is open to you if ever you come back this way again.
After their final meal with Bjorn, the little group set out again, following the directions given them by their host. For 4 days they traveled through pleasant fields and woods until they came to the borders of a great forest. There were no animals to be seen. Birds began to sing less. Ahead were gigantic trees, their trunks huge and gnarled, their branches twisted, their leaves dark and long. Ivy grew on them and trailed along the ground.
Well, here is Mirkwood, the greatest of the forests of the northern world. I hope you like the look of it. Now you must send back those excellent ponies you borrowed.
Oh, why must we send them back just when we need them most? Oh.
Bjorn is not as far off as you seem to think. And you'd better keep your promises, for he's a bad enemy. Let Mr. Baggins tell you what he saw last night.
I thought it was the shadowy form of a great bear prowling along in the same direction as we are going.
Mr. Baggins' eyes are sharper than yours. Bjorn has been with us to guide you and guard you and to keep an eye on his ponies, too. You don't guess what kindness he has shown you in letting dwarves ride them so far and so fast, nor what would happen to you if you tried to take them into the forest.
What about the horse he's loaned to you?
What?
You don't mention sending him back.
I don't, because I'm not sending him.
What about your promise, then?
I'm not sending the horse back. I'm riding it.
Oh,
no, no. No, no. I've told you before. I have pressing business, and I'm already late through bothering with you people. Now we may meet again before all is over, and then again, of course, we may not. No, 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 I'm sending Mr. Baggins with you. I've told you before that he has more about him than you guess, and you'll find that out before long, so cheer up. Now, goodbye, Thorin. And goodbye to you all. Straight through the forest is your way now. Don't stray off the track. If you do, it's 1,000 to 1 you'll never find it again and never get out of Mirkwood.
Do we really have to go through?
Yes, you do, if you want to get to the other side. You must either go through or give up your quest. And I'm not going to allow you to back out now, Mr. Baggins. I'm ashamed of you for thinking of it. You've got to look after all these dwarfs for me.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant, is there no way round?
Oh, there is, if you care to go 200 miles or so out of your way north, and twice that south. Before you could get round Mirkwood in the north, you would be right among the slopes of the Grey Mountains. And they're simply stiff with goblins, hobgoblins, and orcs of the worst description.
Orcs, wouldn't say.
Yes, yes. Now, before you could get rounded in the south, you'd get into the land of the necromancer. Yes, and even you, Bilbo, won't need me to tell you tales of that black sorcerer. I don't advise you to go anywhere near the places overlooked by his dark tower. Stick to the forest track. Keep your spirits up. Hope for the best. And with a tremendous slice of luck, you may come out one day and see the long marshes lying before you. And beyond them, high in the east, the lonely mountain where dear old Smaug lives. Though I hope he isn't expecting you.
Very comforting you are, to be sure.
Yes.
Goodbye. If you won't come with us, you'd better get off without any more talk.
Well, goodbye then. Goodbye. Take care of yourself, and don't leave the path.
Oh, you always tell us how to fly. Goodbye and go away.
Soon the wizard was out of sight. Now began the most dangerous part of all the journey. They each shouldered the heavy pack and water skin which was their share, and turned from the light that lay on the lands outside and plunged into the forest of Mirkwood.
You've been listening to The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, adapted for radio by Bob Lewis, and featuring Ray Reinhardt as Bilbo, Gail Chugg as Gollum and the narrator, Tom Luce as Thorin, and Bernard Mays as Gandalf. Also heard in the cast were Carl Haig, Bob Lewis, and Joe Hughes.